The Articulate Coven is the original, unofficial podcast and fan community for Anne Rice's Interview with the Vampire and Anne Rice's Immortal Universe from AMC and AMC+. Welcome to The Articulate Coven. We're your hosts. I'm Joel.
I'm Ashley.
And we are The Articulate Coven. The Articulate Coven is your unofficial fan podcast and fan community for the Vampire Chronicles, the Interview with the Vampire show from AMC and AMC+, the Mayfair Witches, and that series on AMC+, and all the rest of Anne Rice's works. We talk about all of it eventually. Right now, we are in the middle of a rewatch of season one of Interview with the Vampire, this amazing series. And honestly, the farther we get into it, Ashley, the better I feel about it. Tonight, we're going to be talking about episode five of season one, A Vile Hunger for Your Hammering Heart. We are also, Ashley, are going to talk about the Rollin Jones trailer. Rollin Jones, the showrunner, the creator of this series, cut his own trailer for season two. I had sworn that I wasn't going to watch
that. Yeah, and it's incredible.
It is really, really amazing.
It's so good.
But I had said, I think maybe even in the last episode, that I was done watching trailers for
this season. Yeah, you did say that.
I didn't want to have anything ruined. But someone mentioned something that happens in this trailer, a character that pops up, or an actor at least.
Yes.
And I was so intrigued I had to go watch it. I'm so glad that I did. I've probably watched it, I don't know, maybe 10 times now. And every time I go back, it is its own little artful film. And genuinely, it's like, if that had been the only thing we ever saw of an adaptation of The Vampire Chronicles, I would have been overwhelmed and overjoyed, right? Like, what a fantastic, beautiful portrait of these stories in a little moment in time.
Oh my God. And the sound and the music is incredible. It's just awesome. So I made my husband watch it last night. Or the night before last, whatever. He made me, The Acolyte is coming out later on, a Star Wars series, and that trailer had just come out. So I was like, oh, wait, you want to see a good trailer too? Check this shit out. And he said he was so excited watching it that the season one wasn't a fluke. You know what I mean?
Like, yes.
It clearly so much sets up what we are supposed to experience and feel, and holy shit, it's going to be a hell of a ride. But obviously we are keeping up with the standards that they set for season one in their storytelling and in their production value. Oh, damn. There's so, I just want to go through this like almost frame by frame and freeze it.
So it's so funny. I almost said, why don't we do an actual audio commentary track where we watch it and talk about it? We're not going to do that. But I've got notes for almost every moment of it. And so like, I do want to walk us through it. All right. So let's start right at the top. It is how it happened. That's the quote. You hear Louis's voice before you even, you begin to see a burning image of Lestat's portrait on the wall in Théâtre de Vampire. We've seen that already from an earlier trailer. Armand mentions their founder, or co-founder, I think he says, Lestat de Lioncourt. It is how it happened. I didn't think it at the time, but yeah. Okay. The implication is that he's talking there about maybe Lestat's death or the murder at the end of this first season. But boy, the look on Louis's face and the realization that he himself, you know, doesn't have all of his memories and understandings in place is like right off Front Street, which is amazing. And then it's reinforced it several times during the trailer, but like strong start.
He is heartbreaking in this this trailer.
Oh, by the
way, Louis is like guts me.
Okay.
Like I feel like we're finally getting that level of like angst and yeah.
I think our problem at the Emmys this next year is not going to be that people don't notice this little genre show. I think the problem is going to be that Armand and Lestat are going to split the supporting roles, and Jacob may be our only award winner, even in what is going to be obviously an amazing season. But the next line, I think, is very important too. Armand and Louis are speaking to each other. Armand is telling Louis what they are scared of Daniel.
Yes.
So I mean, listen, if we take this on face value, Ashley, and if we assume it comes early in season two after Daniel's realization that they know each other from the past, you know, that he knows Armand as well, then to me, all of our suppositions that Armand himself might be the one who is massaging all of these events and changing memories and, you know, putting on this performative act for Daniel or for Louis or for who, I think maybe it's wrong. Like the.
So I think that, and this is obviously, you know, guys, we're talking our suppositions from a three minute trailer, you know, but I feel like he's afraid of getting caught. Like Armand's like still playing fucking Louis and is afraid because he's afraid that between Louis and fucking Daniel, they're going to figure out that he's done. That's what I think, because he says he wants to break you apart so he can put you back together. That is not what Daniel is wanting or is even went there to do. Like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Well, I mean, if again, like now maybe everybody's playing everybody against everybody. But, you know, my original supposition about Daniel's motives was just to cure his illness and, you know, regain his youth and the fact that his mortality was weighing on him. That's why he wanted to go have this visit with a vampire again. That to me from Armand sounds like that's he's trying to put you in the place where you'll give him what he wants, you know, which is immortality. I don't know. So exciting. All right. The next line, though, is fantastic, too. Louis now speaking, well, to Claudia, we think, our life is shit. It's been shit. It's going to be shit. But a shit life beats no life. First of all, just Rollins showing off in this trailer with the dialogue, I feel like. But
yeah.
But man, I think, like, again, this sort of hints to me that we might get more of Eastern Europe than I had imagined based on how big Teatro de Vampire has been in the trailers so far and in the marketing so far. But, like, once they get to Paris, it's different. I don't think he's saying this in Paris. I think this is while they're still wading through, you know, the remainders of World War II on the Eastern Front.
I think that's probably right. I feel like we're going to get a good dose of like the struggle and the struggle of the journey and feeling so defeated that they're not finding exactly what they're looking for.
Okay, we see here a little glimpse. There is a haggard looking woman with long nails and like looks like a vampire to me, but like a very bedraggled one. I think this is the old queen. I think this is the old queen of the coven. I think we're getting a glimpse right here at the very beginning of Armand and Lestat's relationship, which
I agree.
Okay. My bet is I'm going to go ahead and lay it. My bet is that somewhere in the middle of the season, 3 or 4, we get a full episode that is a flashback to effectively that, you know, segment of the Vampire Lestat novel as told by Armand.
Right.
I think we get one episode where that story all happens. I don't think it's going to be spaced out through the season. Don't get me wrong. I would like a little Sam every week, but I think they're going to hold him off from us for an episode or two at least before we get Armand's backstory with Lestat. But I think this is our glimpse that we're going to get more of that than we thought, maybe, from previous glimpses. We're gonna get a lot of that story, I bet. All right, Santiago is such a deliciously evil bastard. This actor
he's
is fantastic.
He's always such a dick.
Oh.
He's always such a dick.
He's going to be
in
awesome.
In every fucking version of this character, he's been such a dick. I love it. I love it, love it, love it.
His line about we put on horror shows so we can eat people. I thought it's man. I hope Roland gets someone who has as much, you know, sass and panache and interest as Tom Anderson did, but also he's got fangs and claws in this season. Maybe.
Exactly.
So, yay for that. Okay. My favorite line used to be, of course, of course, of course. Now it's Lestat, 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 Lestat. I think there was 10. I think Armand says it 10 times here.
Yes. And it feels so Armand, doesn't it? It is just fucking delightful. Like, they're doing it so good, Joel.
Ashley, I know we have very, you know, loving and supportive spouses, both of us, and they both are even fans of this series. But
yes.
That
forced,
line,
I'm sure.
That line is everyone that I've ever talked to about these books. It's just, and it's specifically that beautiful bastard. I get done and they're like, yeah, I know. Lestat, 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 Lestat. Okay, speaking of, and I stole a screenshot of this that I'm gonna use as like the thumbnail maybe for this segment of the episode. I don't know. There's an image of Lestat walking through the aisles of the theater, And at first, I was like, okay, this is when, you know, he breaks up with them and leaves the troop or whatever. Because it's right on the heels of Armand saying, you can't script a hurricane.
Yes, which is such a great line.
Right? And it's so descriptive of him. I don't recall, I'm sure our fans will tell us whether I'm wrong, but I don't recall that being anywhere in the books. You can't script a hurricane.
I don't either.
Discussing Lestat. But it is so apt for the way that these characters describe him all over these books, though. All right, but he's walking up the aisle in the theater, and I thought, okay, well, that's easy enough. That's, you know, him leaving the theater. But it's not, because the costuming is not that period. The costuming is the, you know, the 40s, the 1940s, it looks like, for the crowd. And behind him on stage in what looks like, you know, basically a trial going on, Louis and Claudia are on the stand.
Oh, shit. I did not see that.
We're going to see the trial, Ashley.
Oh, my God. You guys. You guys. We're so excited. Look, listen. I knew there's shit deep in this that I still haven't picked up or noticed. I'm going to have to watch this 1,000 times before we get to the season.
It's such a great image, too. It's super brief. But there is like a screen or a projection. I guess it's a projection behind, you know, this... You know, the trial is going on. They're like on the stand as witnesses, but it's Louis, Claudia, and Madeline as well is beside them.
Oh,
and then
there are
figures behind them with like powdered wigs on. So, I mean, it is absolutely a trial. And behind them all at the very, very top are flames on this projection. And I was like, oh boy, we are actually going to see it happen.
This is going to be really interesting too, because I'm sure the version of this that we're going to see is going to be so intensely fuck Lestat, you know, like it's got to be, because we're seeing this Louis's version is already, you know, whatever, but Armand has to protect what he did and keep his secret of what he had done and his involvement in everything and what he did to Claudia. So,
okay. But I don't think that he does. I don't think that he does keep his secret. We'll get to that in a second, though. All right. So Lestat leaves the theater, and then, man, okay. We're going to talk about this in the episode itself later. I have downplayed in my head, I think, what Bailey did with season one and her performance in Claudia. The accent has always bothered me, still does a little bit, and I think I have knocked her in general because of that. But like, she's so strong in this episode we're going to discuss tonight. And
yes,
our new Claudia here gets to show off with this line, picked another one over me. I mean, just
Damn. Cuts
to your heart, doesn't it? Especially when you know where that's coming from. But like, God bless it. And it connects so directly with Claudia's angst in this episode that we're going to discuss this evening too. But like, oh man, just brilliant work there. And I think... Yeah, I think she's going to be an amazing Claudia. I'm very, very excited to see what Delaney does with this.
She looks a bit younger somehow, too.
She may be a couple of years younger, too, than...
Yeah, she totally might be. I haven't looked at that. I just feel like she's dressing younger than she was trying to push in New Orleans. You know, she was really trying to embrace being an older, you know... Her aging, her development as a woman, even though she was trapped in this miniature body, you know. And we see it in the film version as well. In France, Claudia starts wearing dresses that look like what a grown-ass woman would wear, but like a little lady version of it, you know what I mean? But this like shot of her with this sort of like pigtail look with this kind of... shapeless dress, and she is so angry and so in control, like out of control in that moment with her anger and her hurt. And it's such a strong, powerful moment. And the juxtaposition of her looking so young in that moment it fucking knocked it out of the park for me. And I am really excited to see what she does.
I am too. And I think you're right. Like, it's just a glimpse, but what a glimpse he gave us. Okay, after that, this is the moment that brought me into this trailer to begin with. Justin Kirk. Now, I know Justin Kirk best from Weeds. He's been in a ton of stuff, though. He played the excellent, you know, brother-in-law in Weeds, the goofy, moron. But here, he is a mysterious character, playing looks to me a little older than he is yes. himself, right? Like clearly in age makeup and, you know, his hair is whitened, etc. There are two lines, basically, that we get with him. One, from over his shoulder, we see Daniel speaking to him, and he says, "I want to get out of this alive." And then Justin Kirk says, "You fear Armand. You should fear the other one." Okay, first thing first. I mean, it's a fairly well-known actor. Added to the cast announcements and the publicity very late in the game.
And quietly. I didn't even
right?
notice
Nobody,
that
It wasn't
one.
A big deal. It was like in a press release, I think. But like, and also singled out here in this trailer from Rollin himself, like literally put together by Rollin, where you know he's teasing us and showing us some things. It's got to be a character of significance, and there are only really a handful that make sense. The initial speculation I saw from everybody was, oh my God, they're going to give us David. And that would make sense why they're
David Talbot.
You're aging him up, because then you can take all of that off.
So you can de-age him? Right. Yep, exactly. Right.
And so maybe it's not exactly like a body thief situation, but you reinvigorate this elderly man when you give him the blood kind of thing. Okay, that would work. The accent is something. You know, I think I absolutely read it as British the first time I saw the trailer. Lots of other fans did the same. Erica Robert Paolo mentioned in her comments on it that it read more to her as just, you know, educated Northeastern American kind of thing.
Right.
And basically like the classic Middle Atlantic accent they used to make,
right.
you know, classic actors have. This is what Cary Grant sounds like, I guess, if you think about it.
Right. The accentless sort of educated kind of.
Yes, except white it comes man. Off, especially in the modern day, it comes off as not American. It's very yeah. anglicized because it's so influenced by the British accent. I don't know, man. I don't know. Okay, so the other thing that Erica proposed specifically, and I think I've seen a couple of other people say this too, the silver hair, maybe Marius, if it's not David. Erica does not believe that it's David Talbot. I think if this is hinting to anybody, I think the feint, if that's what it is towards David. It may not be David. Maybe they're amalgamating a couple of people from the Talamasca. I mean, Aaron Leitner is a character really more from the Mayfair series than
right.
I think he shows up technically in one scene in Queen of the Damned or something with the rest of the Talamasca that are around then, but
yes, with Jesse.
Yeah, I don't think you. Either way, that's a British character too. I don't know if they show us this guy and it's not either Marius or David, I'm going to be very disappointed. Justin Kirk's a great actor. I don't want this to be just a one season character. He seems to have though Daniel's confidence there, and so that to me would hint much more strongly on Talbot than. Marius. Like, Marius
well,
would not
and he
have
seems,
a public front in that way, I don't think.
Right. And he seems to know. And I also don't think Marius would meddle in this, in that particular kind of fashion. Not that Marius is not a bastard of meddling, but I think that I just can't see him being involved in that. But, you know, who the hell knows how they're going to switch things around on us. I got excited immediately because if it is David, then this is a great way to do kind of a reset mentally for all of us from the absolutely ridiculous version of the Talamasca we were stuck with in the Mayfair Witches, and hopefully a reintroduction of the Talamasca in a different way with this third show looming. I also looked all over IMDb and I could not find shit about this character.
He's not named anywhere. He
no.
has not been named anywhere. And that's why I'm saying, like, it's like got it's, to matter. It's got to matter.
I totally agree because, like, the second we started that conversation in the group, I was like, oh shit, I didn't even register that it could be David. Holy shit. And then I got all excited and I got all up in the internet. Not a fucking word of it. Not a hint or a tease of a character mentioned.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just hopeful. I'm keeping my fingers crossed and so glad that we don't have that long to wait. Like
we're
barely over a month away now. Claudia says to Louis, "You're stronger." And the first time I watched the trailer, I just thought she meant after all we've gone through. No, this is after he's eaten Armand.
Yeah.
He's actually stronger now.
Stronger.
And she sees it on him. And I mean, we see earlier in the trailer, we see him like drinking from Armand's wrist. So that's not a surprise. But like, I like the fact that they are going to level Louis up a little bit in the series and show us how that happens and show us him understanding it and dealing with it, as well as Claudia seeing it.
Well, they're finally getting to learn about their people, their, you know, they're finally getting to learn about other fucking vampires. They've been waiting and waiting for this and been, you know, searching and searching for it, for some meaning, for Louis some meaning, and for Claudia some companionship. That's all that girl in her heart is looking for, is someone to choose her.
God, that is so true. Oh,
it's so sad. She breaks my heart.
It really is a tragic story. I know I poo-pooed it a little bit last week, and it's not my favorite parts, but it is beautifully tragic, and it is absolutely a part of the, you know, prism that these two characters in particular, Louis and Lestat, of who they are, you know, and I love both of them very much.
It's a huge moment in their relationship. It's a huge, like, every bit of Claudia, her creation was, she was created to keep, anyway, we could talk about this trailer for an entire episode.
I want to hit one more hard though. It's you and me and you. You and me and you, you and me and Ashley. The cutting of this is fucking teach it in film school, y'all. When is Roland going to direct? That's what I want to know. Does Roland direct an episode in season two? I would not be surprised based on this trailer.
I don't know. I'm starting to think maybe he should do his own damn editing.
Right? Fairly fucking fantastic. So that line in particular, though, the way that he does it and he showcases, you know, first he's speaking, I'm guessing, to Claudia, right, in desperation that this isn't over. She's telling him it is, and this is the way we're going to go. And he's like, it's you and me, it's me and you, it's you and me. But what does the trailer do? No, it shows us Louis and Claudia and Armand and Louis and Louis and Santiago and Louis and Lestat and Lestat and Armand.
And Armand.
And what? and of course, right? And what? Oh my God, we know the relationship. Particularly, I love the fact that they put Santiago in there, right? Because that's our boss. That's our boss this season, which the you and me and you and me. There's an image of, I'm going to call it Batman Louis in his full fucking garb. Clearly that man is up to some business. Did you see that? He's got like a gray, it looks like a miner's jacket or something, like a thick leather jacket on. He's got his gear.
They're going to go burn some shit down.
Okay, so probably my favorite moment of the entire original movie. And there are lots of good ones. But the 94 movie, I think the best shot of the whole thing is the standoff across the bottom of the theater. Santiago on one side, Louis on the other, the scythe in Louis's hand as they run at each other, right? Like, oh, it's just that whole scene is like my shit particularly. And the fact that they gave us
vengeful
one little shot of that Louis like that. Oh, my God. Woo, the end of this season is going to be something, Ashley.
It is going to be amazing.
Okay, this is the line that I started to mention earlier and I didn't want to rush ahead. Armand says, I failed Louis once in my life. It wasn't in San Francisco. I think at least by the end of this season, maybe Louis doesn't understand the exact particulars of everything currently in our modern time setting. But by the end of this season, I think Louis will actually know exactly what Armand did.
Yes.
At every step of the way, especially as it relates to Claudia. And I think that line is as much to him as it is to Daniel.
100%. 100%. And even if Louis is not around it in that moment, even if that's like we find out that's just a scene between Armand and Daniel, I agree with you completely that all that shit's going to come to pass. Everything's going to come out. And then that'll be a separation here at the end of the season.
Man, and you talk again about Jacob Anderson's performance, the final line from him, I want this to remember, as he is just pouring tears and obviously
it's heartbreaking.
Trembling. It's amazing.
Yeah, so good. This is the version of Louis that this version of Louis is the version of Louis that I've kind of been missing a little bit with this first season. It just didn't seem that things, I don't know, the great heartbreak of the world and being a vampire and everything and losing everything and losing everyone you love and leaving your family behind and losing Claudia. And just, he was very much in so many ways a very broken character. And I don't think we see as much of that in the first season, or they don't push it quite as far, quite as far. And it tends to be more about, he's more heartbroken about, you know, about his family and his relationships with his family changing. And, you know, I don't know. I just think that we're getting to see more of Louis's character from the book that I enjoy.
Cannot wait. Honestly, Ashley, the last time that I obsessed over a single trailer as much as I have this one was probably the Star Wars Episode One trailer when it first came out. I had to download it on QuickTime.
Right.
Take 45 minutes to be as big as a postage stamp.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. With a good old dial-up.
All right, let's talk about this episode.
This is a great episode, by
the way. It is. A Vile Hunger for Your Hammering Heart, directed by Levin Aiken, written by Hannah Moscovich. Anne Rice and Rollin Jones get the credit. I mention Anne Rice every week. Somebody on the YouTube referenced in a recent episode, they commented on it and said they were not aware that there was a break with the Rice family and the show until we had mentioned it recently again, something about Christopher not liking it. I mention Anne Rice in the credits every week, just as she is listed in the credits on IMDb, because I think it's appropriate. All of this show is very clearly based on her work. They up and down the cast and crew list have a reverence for her work and her part in it. The fact that the business arrangement displeased she and Christopher early on, I don't think tarnishes the legacy of this show and how it connects to her works, you know, broadly at all. So I'm going to keep mentioning her in that credit, but I do want you to understand that I do understand she didn't write any of these scripts.
Right. But they literally make such good use of what things she did write and
yes.
pull directly lines from, as we've discussed, lines from the book directly, lines of dialogue from the book directly, descriptions from the book directly, and put them in the mouths of our perfect, perfect vampires. And so she is there, definitely.
So no 9-course meal this time, but right out of the gate, we are performatively eating.
So loud.
We should have known, by the way, the first time we watched this. Rashid Armand handles this feeding so fucking well. The other dude was an actual bodybuilder and stumbled out of the room when he got done eating. And we were both like, dude, was he living? Maybe they just like burned him, threw him away. Rashid is fine. He wipes his neck and then sasses away to Daniel as like Louis orders him out of the room. I cannot believe we didn't pick up on this more direct. I know we suspected all along, but like, damn it, we should have known.
Yeah, it is. Also, that you said performative feeding, and that is, it was the loudest, slurpiest feeding. It was almost the same blowjob noises from the bayou.
It was so cool. I thought the same thing. I'm like, they reused the Foley.
I think they did. I was like, whoa. Oh, okay. Whoo.
I love, there's a line here early. A convention city is not motivated to advertise grim statistics. Boy, that is just as true today as then.
That is New Orleans to a T.
Right. But also, apropos to the later parts of this episode, see college campuses and sexual assault reports, right?
Oh, my God. You guys.
People, they count the statistics they want to be counted. I am reminded of the former president saying, well, when you test more, the numbers go up.
Yeah. Ugh. We all know that those grim-ass statistics, you know what I mean? And they are grim. And I am actually really glad, because that's that Claudia's little trip, her 7-year journey that she goes on, is not at all part of the books. It's not at all part of any part of Claudia's story as we know it. And so I think that was a really interesting way to show how vulnerable she is. Even though she's strong and she's powerful, she's a vampire, she's still incredibly vulnerable. She's still a young woman in a world where men want to eat you alive.
Man, let's just talk for a second generally about the impossibility of parenting. Like,
oof.
You want your
children. It's so impossible, I didn't do it. It's so impossible, I was like, a hard pass on that.
Like, you want your children to develop as independent individuals, right? You want them to all be masters of their own domain. But also, you need to know if they're murdering dozens of people and hiding them in the shallow waters of Chalmette. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you, because if I know that you're trying to bury people below sea level, I can let you know that that's a shit idea.
I just think I literally, they were picking up the diary. And I don't know why this hit me more this time than it did the first time. But I think about like reading our kids' text. We don't always, we know and we tell them like, hey, they're available to us. And if we go look, like you're not going to be able to hide them. We pay for those devices. We have to know what you're up to. Please right. don't give us, but this is like the second aspect of this. Man, there's a great line in the X-Men 97 animated show. Don't make me let you down, Magneto says at one point. And it's like a double entendre there because he's holding people up. But also, like, that's how I feel about my kids. Like, yes, I understand it's a breach of privacy when I go into your phone. If you have proven to me over and over again that I can't trust your behavior, and it's going to make you unsafe as a person, but also since there are other people living in this house, the rest of us unsafe, which is literally right. the case here, right? Like she's hiding exactly. body parts and trophies, which endangers all of them. Like all, yeah, Lestat is a very powerful vampire, but if the entire New Orleans police force comes for him and burns that building down, he might not make it out, right? Like same yeah. thing with Louis. So like their lives are literally on the line here. And you know, the nonsense that I deal with my children is not of that heightened nature, obviously, but it feels that way sometimes, especially when, unlike Louis and Lestat, I'm not going to have 40 years to raise my kid. Like I got 18 at best, and then they're outie and they get to do what they want. Anyway, it struck me. It's not just the vampirism that makes this all very hard, you know?
Oh, 100%. Also, like, relationships are complicated and families are complicated and families go through, you know, changes. I think about how many different people I've been since I was like 16 years old. You know what I mean? Like, I've changed and become so many different versions of myself, you know, as I've grown and changed, and my family has done the same thing, you know, and to see it in this heightened way, to see kind of a family dynamic also in like the most stressful time a family can be, you know, sort of falling apart. She's completely shut them out. She's not communicating with them. She, even with, you know, Louis can't even scratch into her mind a little bit at this point, you know, when she's, they come home and she's drunk. They come home and their daughter's drunk in the house and has let cops in. You know what I mean? Like, holy shit, have you lost your fucking mind? She ate a drunk man and got drunk. Hilarious.
I don't know if this is a reference to the scene in the 94 film where Lestat gets her a little drunk with two drunk boys that he lets her drink. One of them's already dead. But yes, like watching Claudia kind of stumble around, it was hilarious. Absolutely. We're watching Modern Family with the kids, and like this was like one of those Haley moments. You know, she got arrested right. for assaulting the cop or whatever.
Yes, yes. She comes home just absolutely blasted.
Man,
Lord.
So, but you skipped over my boyfriend, though. There's a Tom Anderson sighting, folks.
Oh, yes, yes.
And he's kind of silver foxy at this point, too, as he's been tapped on the shoulder by Baton Rouge.
Yes, he'll be going to Baton Rouge to the state capitol.
I love it. I love it when he uses, now I can't remember, it's like a pig in a daffodil field. And then he like lets it hang out there. He's like, I don't know what it means either.
I don't know what that means. I'm just talking to hear myself speak.
Y'all, I don't know.
He's such a great addition. I'm really glad that they added, if you're going to add in brand new characters that we don't know, please make them as entertaining as he was.
Well, and give them lines like, there's one of them temperance fart knockers running again. The city of a thousand saloons shamed into the shadows. Like, oh, yes. Jesus, I want to play Tom Anderson in a stage performance of Interview with the Vampire.
Put that out in the universe. Yeah, well, we need to make a vision board for that shit.
Rollin, where's the community theater rights, baby? Come on, man.
Yes, we're ready.
We are ready. Let's go back to the house now. Let's talk about the cops, because Ashley, you may not know this, but Deputy Habersham, the cop that shows up there, that's actually a historical character. He's a member of an illustrious family. One of his future descendants, actually, is going to be heard in a courtroom. Your Honor,
I'm just a plain country lawyer. I don't know much about the city ways, but I do believe this is the thickest accent. What is this guy doing?
You could cut it with a dull knife. Right? It's so thick and rich.
I believe I'd put another bed into the boudoir before I bothered calling the police.
Yes.
All right, so I mentioned this earlier when we were discussing the Rolling Jones trailer. I have downplayed Bailey's performance in this season for myself just over time. She's fantastic here. I don't like Claudia's story, but Bailey is wringing every bit of juice out the squeeze here. I think I'm going to love Delaney just as much based on those glimpses we've gotten of her, but her angst here is so real too. We talked about how hard it is to be a parent earlier, but like, listen, it sucks ass to be a teenager basically all of the time.
Oh my God. Can you imagine? Jesus Christ. Like, I'd rather be 5.
Oh yeah. Oh, listen, I'd love to be 22, maybe. I don't know if I'd want to be 22 again, honestly. I'd be 25 again for sure. There's not enough money to make me 15 again, though.
No, and not forever. My God.
Jesus H. I would probably hide body parts in my house, too.
Yes. Well, she's acting like that's the other thing, is she is literally behaving like a straight-up serial killer.
Yo, for real.
She's keeping meticulous notes about everyone she's killed and their last words. She's cutting off boobs and ears and fingers, and we find out that she's been desperately trying to make another vampire. And you're like, Jesus Christ, Claudia, we're gonna pack some of this.
So they don't, Lestat and Louis never say here, but the implication is, and I think this is the case, well, it's definitely the case in the book, although she's much younger and smaller in the books, but I think the implication is here that she literally doesn't have enough blood.
Does not have the blood.
She doesn't have enough blood to do it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that came to me in a flash, like, oh, it's not about her physical strength. It's about her actual size.
Yeah.
And I don't know why after, 40 years, that's just occurred to me.
She doesn't have enough volume to do it. Yeah. I mean, it does make me wonder, like, you know, if she had had, okay, so Armand in the books is kind of a mad scientist about this sort of shit. She had had an Armand to mess with her, could they have hooked her up and done, like, What's the thing? Dialysis? Could they have done dialysis basically for long enough
like
and eventually it
like
happened?
Like a bypass machine?
Yeah, like just hook them up to each other. I don't know. Anyway.
Well, here's the thing about Armand is Armand would have just made her a fucking vampire.
Yeah.
Armand would have just made her a companion. He wouldn't have had this him and haw over it. Like, I don't understand why, aside from just not wanting another vampire running around, like, what the hell is it going to hurt to make her a companion? Someone that is going to go through the same sort of situations that she's gone through. Like, what would it hurt?
Especially here as she lays it out there, it really does befuddle you. Like, it's like just Lestat's pride and selfishness, you know?
Well, and Louis could have done it. Louis could have done that for her. He does it for her eventually, but he could have done that for her.
Do you think that he knows that? I don't think that he knows that. I don't think that he knows that he is capable of it.
That's interesting.
And I don't think, I do think also.
I'm going to sit with that for a little while,
I think
Joel,
it's one of those things,
it.
Though, where he is, like, purposely ignorant. I think that he does not know the answer to that question and does not want it answered because then the responsibility would fall on him. I'm gonna get to his lack of responsibility in just a minute, actually. But there's one thing here I do want to call out. I don't know how I'm going to be able to implement this in my own marriage, but it would be a lot more effective going to bed angry with each other if you got to slam the door when you laid down. Right? Like, they go to bed in the coffins and they're mad, they're fussing as they lay down and they both slam their coffin lid.
Slam their coffin shut.
That is very effective. Thrumping the pillow doesn't work the same.
No, it's like the satisfaction. Yeah, rolling over aggressively to the other side. It's not the same
as slamming the coffin lid. Okay, let's talk about Killer. First of all, I absolutely like the idea of taking an incredibly minor character from the books, comes up a few times, and making that storyline line up better with your TV series. I think that's fine.
Yeah.
This, though, it's not quite as bad a mistake as just like a raw mistake as Lestat speaking to Louis after he's been turned, like we talked about a few episodes ago. This was a choice. I think that was literally just a mistake. This was a choice. It's just one that I think was totally wrong. This character is not needed. The way this story plays out is not needed. She could have had things go badly for her without it being specifically like this. She could have been hunted, right? Like, what if just some humans, like if she attacked a human and a band of them scarred her very badly, chased her into, you know, like fine, she got away, but like was very injured or something. You could have still made this horrific for her and driven her back to New Orleans and to Louis without the actual sexual assault story. We talked about it in the last time when we watched this series first. We already mentioned a little bit earlier. Absolutely, this is true in the real world. This happens on college campuses. I understand why they put these two things together. I just don't like it. I don't like where it leads to in the show. I don't like the ramifications of it. I don't like the way Lestat jokes about it. None of this plays to me in a way that is positive for anything. It's just the biggest decision I disagree with.
I understand that completely. I don't mind it as a choice because I think it's such a reality. I think that it doesn't matter how strong and powerful we as women think we are easily overpowered by a man who wants something from us. And that is real. And that is the most vulnerable, I think, that most women have ever felt if they've experienced anything like that. And it is a harsh reality. And it is something that trauma-wise could push you back into the arms of other things, other people, your family, an ex, an addiction, you know what I mean? So to me, it helps set up what's going to become a very heightened situation, heightened exchanges, fights. I feel like you need something strong and powerful to lead to what's going to happen next.
All right, fair. All right, what happens next? Claudia comes back to New Orleans and watches basically as Louis is buried. His sister has called him and said that it's time. She's kind of scared of him in this scene a little bit. He hasn't aged, and she clearly has. And they're moving up north. The stock market crash wiped him out, and they're going to move up north to greener pastures, so to speak. And she's set up his mausoleum, you know, put a death date on, and Louis de Pointe-Lac is dead.
And she wants nothing from him. She wants nothing from him. Don't offer to help me. Don't offer to help us. Bye.
I do appreciate, though, they still embrace when she leaves.
Yes, they do.
She says goodbye to her Louis, even though she doesn't feel like this is him anymore. Claudia's got a great line there, though, from her diary. They made me to be Louis's sister. And that is exactly the relationship that we've been building to in this series. It's absolutely the way they're going to play it in season two. It's clear as this is a baby sister relationship. I shared a reel on our group, Facebook group, recently, like last week sometime, from the Drew Barrymore show. She's talking about, now I can't remember who gave the advice, but somebody had given advice formerly on her show, your family knows how to push your buttons because they installed them. And that's what this entire final scene is about.
Yeah.
Lestat. Yeah. Ashley, I'm going to be very, very raw here. We talked earlier about how hard parenthood is. I've got a 14-year-old who just loves to fight, with me especially, loves to argue. And I, because of my own nature, find it hard to de-escalate. And I saw it so clearly in Lestat's behavior here once Claudia comes back. She does not come with hat in hand.
No.
She also, though, did not come to fight. Not at first. And he starts it. Now, it escalates because Louis attacks him, and then Lestat begins to defend himself. But it all happened because Lestat had to be shitty out loud. He couldn't just keep the shitty thoughts in his head. You know, I mean, I tell my 14-year-old that all the time. You can think that the rest of the world is the biggest idiots that ever, you know, you can't believe they can tie their shoes. You can think that all you want. Keep it in your head. When you let it out, then you draw battle lines. You demand retaliation and response. And boy, I'm guilty of it, and I felt it as Lestat started this thing.
Man, he grabs her. Ooh, Lord. And she's scared. Like, she looks scared.
Terrified.
Of him.
Yeah.
And I think that that's something, you know, you and I have talked a lot about this scene and how hard it is, and that we hope that it's not 100%. We know it's not 100% real. We know it's not 100% accurate, you know. But I'm interested to see what, you know, what Claudia would say about it in her journal, you know, specifically. I don't think that, maybe they do address that. I don't think so, though. And there has to be a reason why they want to leave him. And it is literally the fear of that Louis has that he's going to hurt Claudia, I think, honestly, is what it comes down to, especially in this situation. You know, we talk about domestic violence and a domestic violence expert that I kind of follow on social media and things says that the moment that a partner has put their hands around your throat, that your risk of being killed by that partner increases by something like 60%, which is wild. That one time you let yourself one time go that far, that is going to, it's just crazy, crazy, crazy. And I think that has to be what is pushing us to leave. We have to have a reason. It had to get this violent. It had to get this scary. And it is, man. When he's dragging Louis by his throat,
it's so
like
terrible.
Under his jaw, it is horrifying. Like, I let myself, this is a very heightened fantastical battle that we're going to see, that we see here. It's not a fight that people would have in their house, because it's vampires fighting.
Right.
But it's literally a fight that people would have in their house.
God. And just when he tells Claudia it's fine. It's fine. We're okay now. We worked it out.
It's fine.
Just stay
it's
out
fine.
There. Don't come.
Yeah.
Stay where you are.
That's
absolutely abuser shit.
Horrifying.
But listen, okay, here's the one, and I am not defending what Lestat does as it plays out here in the show, but I do want to say, Louis's indecision and lack of will to step out there and say something. I think in a previous episode we joked about how he's runaway bride, he doesn't know how he wants his eggs.
Yeah.
Claudia comes in and says, we're leaving. We're going to find new vampires, you know, other vampires. We're going to figure out what
we came from. I've been doing research. I've been reading
books. I'm tired of your lies. Yeah. Okay. And Lestat says, no, you wouldn't leave me, would you? Louis could have, I mean, listen, the fight probably would have happened anyway, especially if Claudia said what she says there, when that finally triggers Lestat to snap at her too. But
right.
If Louis had just said, standing there in the room when they're all still 9 feet apart from each other, if he had just said, I don't love you, Lestat. This is not working. Yes.
He can't even say that to him at the end of this episode.
Exactly. He's literally been defeated because, and he still can't say it.
And he still can't tell Lestat he doesn't love him, because that would be a fucking lie, because he does love him.
Well, I'm saying,
we love shitty people sometimes.
I mean, yes, boy, that's true. That is absolutely true. But like, Louis's lack of agency.
Yeah.
Self-will, you know, self-determination, I think is going to be an ongoing problem for him. And no matter who it is that we've sort of like pondered is actually pulling the strings on, you know, this interview and the performative things that they're doing with Daniel, et cetera, whether that's Armand, whether that's somebody else behind the scenes, whether it's for Lestat or what, like, I don't think it's coming from Louis, and when is Louis going to do what he wants? That continues to be the question.
I mean, hardly ever, and maybe never. There's an interesting, to go way, 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 way back towards the beginning of the episode, Daniel and Armand are talking, and he says that this is like Louis basically committing suicide, like telling this story and letting Daniel write, presumably writing this book that he's going to write is going to bring, you know, all of the vampires to Dubai, crawling up the sides of the walls, which is, you know, essentially what kind of happens with in Queen of the Damned, with once Lestat has really, really, really caused some ruckus. But so I feel like we're definitely pushing towards and setting up Queen of the Damned for sure.
So it's so interesting to me, because that's the thing. This whole fight scene is so out of character for Lestat in the books. He does not treat Louis this way. They tussle once ever in the books, and it's very minor. Meanwhile, it is precisely sometimes beat for beat and moment for moment, including lines that happen in the air, straight from a scene between Armand and Lestat, right? Now, also think about, just as you said, in the build-up to Queen of the Damned. So when we get to the modern storyline in the Vampire Lestat novel, Lestat is he's written this album. They've done all these music videos. He's planning this giant concert and tour. And everyone that is a vampire that still has any connection to him is telling him, they're going to come for you and kill you. There are moments early in the books where people try to attack him. There are moments late in the book where people try to attack him. And then the end of it is literally like, they're burning the world. What's going on? And is anybody going to make it out alive? Anyway, these two things seem to me to be connected in a way that I can't shake. And again, it's like, where are they massaging the modern storyline to make these things fit? So that this is all, I need answers for this episode in season two. And I'm very hopeful that we're going to get them.
I think we will. I think that, I hope we will. I think that we're going to very slowly see, I think, kind of the veil falling from Louis's eyes as the more he's talking to Daniel and Daniel's asking him questions, more probing questions, the more time he and Daniel spend without Armand hovering over them, they're going to be having different conversations. And so I could see maybe, you know, it's like was it raining, that scene?
Yes.
You know, where he's like, oh, wait, was it? I don't remember. But maybe, you know, through these conversations, he's going to slowly start seeing things for what they really are. I mean, I think that has to be where this is heading.
Man, we've talked sometimes in our rewatch here about specific images that we noticed this time with my beautiful monitor that I was watching this episode on in HDR. The splayed out body of Louis as he's landed there in the courtyard is so fucked up. Like, his legs are akimbo. His arms are like clearly broken in several places. It is really, really crazy the way that they make him look. And then they follow it up with this amazing shot of Lestat descending down behind the two of them and then hovering there. So, so beautiful.
Powerful.
It's a conclusion of a fucked up storyline. But like, kudos to director and cinematographer.
Well, you know who's in charge. Like, you know who's in charge at that moment. You're like, well, y'all gonna have to do something.
I think we referenced this in our first watch too, but in case not, I'll mention it here. The song to finish the episode, pretty jarring the moment that it comes on. It's called Home Is Where You're Happy. It was written by Charles Manson. That was referenced earlier in the episode.
Yes.
Daniel says, Charles Manson wrote a few songs.
I did not catch that at all. I'm shocked I missed that.
Yeah, I had to look it up to verify, but it absolutely is. Home Is Where You're Happy is the name of the song.
Shit.
So he lived, apparently, and played with the Beach Boys for like a few weeks. Like, there was a couple of crossovers there.
Yeah, that's a pretty wild story, and he was really, that's one of the reasons why he chose that house, was because it had belonged to a music producer that had kind of like snubbed him, and that's why that house was chosen. It had nothing to do with Sharon Tate, had nothing to do with, you know, her at all, or anybody else that was in that house. They literally used to belong to a music producer that was like, nah, I'm gonna pass on your stuff.
Man, it's a real, like, what if Hitler had gotten to art school kind of situation, huh?
Oh, Jesus, you know? I mean, for real. Yeah, but he ran around with the Beach Boys and for like briefly was buddies with one of them, and he was trying to help him get his stuff produced, and that's kind of how all that shit started going down. For the true crime fans that also might be with us.
Bum, bum. In the criminal justice system, there are two separate but equal... No.
And Ashley knows everything about both of them because hyperfixation.
All right. So listen, I don't like this episode, but there was a lot there. Absolutely.
Yeah.
This is a great series. And the trailer shows us that is not, as your husband said, not just a fluke.
Yeah.
You know, we've got more greatness coming in May.
Yeah, absolutely. We have two episodes left, right? In the rewatch? Is that what we've got?
Yes, 7 episodes in season 1. There are going to be 8 for season 2. We know the titles for the first 7, but the title for the 8th episode is apparently a spoiler, and they're going to hold
it,
I think, all the way until the very end. Ashley, I'm excited to begin the downhill slide on this one with you.
And, yes!
Thank you to everybody who's been commenting on YouTube and Facebook and Discord and elsewhere and checking out our stuff. We appreciate you. Watch the 6th episode of season 1 before we come back and talk again. Until we come back, we've been your hosts. I'm Joel.
I'm Ashley.
And we are the Articulate Coven. Thanks for listening to The Articulate Coven. You can join our community on Facebook by following the links in the show notes or searching for Articulate Coven on Facebook. You can subscribe to the show in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or at articulatecoven.com. And share us with your Anne Rice-loving friends.